Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Caller Podcast, the Friday video edition. It is Friday, the 7th day of September. We're 1 week into September, and what a week for news it's already been with the Supreme Court hearing, which we're going to dive into in a minute. But a little bit of housekeeping. We're going to do the drawing for the signed Kurt Schlichter books at the end of the show. We also have no guest who has a book out, so we don't have a signed book to give away this week. So as a consolation prize, I'll give away 2 signed copies of my own book. If you want to win one of those, email Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com by sometime next week. We'll figure it out during the show. And you get a chance to win one of those, or I don't know, maybe they'll have some resale value. I doubt it. If you can sell them by the pound, you get like a buck and a half. So enter to do that. And then I think we're getting an author next week, a real author, not me. So we'll have hopefully more signed books to give away in the future. Before we start, though, I want to thank our sponsor, the American Conservative Union, ACU, and let you know that the American people are subsidizing drug prices around the world, subsidizing health care around the world. It is outrageous. An American company hired Americans, develops a new drug, an amazing wonder drug. It takes 10 years. It costs $1 billion to develop. And other countries say that's very interesting, but we're only going to pay X amount of dollars for these drugs, no matter what they cost, no matter how much we have to pay for them. They say that, or they'll steal the patent and manufacture the drugs themselves. It's a scam. It's a fraud. The government, the drug companies have no choice. They can either take zero and watch their work be stolen by a foreign government, or acquiesce to these foreign governments for their price control schemes. But that money has to be made up somewhere. And that somewhere is here in the United States. So we end up paying more for drugs than we otherwise would because the rest of the world is paying less. The American Conservative Union has backing Donald Trump's efforts to end this practice. A lot of presidents have said, oh, this is an outrage, and then done nothing about it. The president now is actually trying to do something about it. And you need to educate yourself about this. Go to conservative.org. That's pretty easy to remember. Conservative.org to learn all about this ridiculous practice and find out how you can help. Thanks to the ACU. Good stuff. It's very important. I used to do health policy at the Heritage Foundation, and it is a real, real problem. The rest of the world free riding off the United States of America. Speaking of free riding, ladies and gentlemen, our guest today is our first returning champion, the first repeat guest, which means he's the least famous and easiest to get. It's Brian Darling, my good friend. I have Brian here because there is nobody, literally nobody, except for maybe a senator who's been in office for about 40 years who knows Senate procedure better than Brian. And with this being the week of the Kavanaugh hearings, and this means we're getting into the end game, it's time now for Democrats to start playing all kinds of games. So I thought, let's get an expert in here. Brian, first of all, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me on again.
How many senators have you worked for?
I've worked for 5 United States senators, and I did work for the Senate Judiciary Committee for about a year and a half.
Right. So you know this process, sure, the judicial nomination process, as well as the Senate rules. Yesterday, it's today technically, but we're recording this on Thursday. Follow along. You need a slide rule to figure out what the hell's going on here. The Democrats threatened to invoke the 2-hour rule to cut short the Kavanaugh hearings, which at this point I think everybody would be in favor of. Let's just end this. We all know what the outcome is going to be, and it's wasting taxpayer time and money. But explain what the 2-hour rule is and what invoking it would have done, because most people rightly don't know what Senate rules are.
Right. So the Senate works on under unanimous consent. Most of the time they all agree to basically break the rules. I mean, they'll make agreements that run contrary to the rules of the Senate to get work done.
But as long as nobody objects, it's okay.
As long as nobody objects. Well, one of the rules of the Senate is that...
And the Senate rules are not anywhere in the Constitution. They are free to make them.
Right.
However they want.
Right, and the Constitution authorizes each chamber to make their own rules. So one of the Senate rules is, and this is a rule that's been around for forever, I mean, is that the Senate is not allowed to conduct hearings 2 hours after they're called into session.
And why is that?
Well, the reason for that is so that they can conduct actual Senate business, even though we know they don't do that.
So, right, but they gavel in at 9 o'clock that
right.
morning. So that means that they can only have hearings if there's no unanimous consent until 11 o'clock under Senate rules.
That's right.
And then they're supposed to be down on the floor debating.
Yes.
And, but they're never supposed on the floor debating.
Right.
They're never on the floor debating.
Yeah.
Okay, so then if...
But that rule is obviously waived all the time because they have hearings in the afternoon and the morning. Kavanaugh hearings, as we've seen, have gone on all day. I mean, they hearings...
So you couldn't even start a hearing at 1 o'clock.
No.
And just go for 2 hours.
Not under the rules. But they waive the rules all the time. And what happens is any senator can go down to the Senate floor, invoke what is called the two-hour rule, and say, I object to the Senate Judiciary Committee conducting business after 2 hours when the Senate's been gaveled in, and I ask that the committee process be shut down. And they can shut that hearing down while the Senate's in session.
Unanimous consent. So they say, we request unanimous consent to waive the two-hour rule. Somebody, Senator Schmo, says, I object. They couldn't then hold a roll call vote and say, we override Senator Schmo 99-1, we're going to ignore it.
You could, but basically the two-hour rule is something that's used so infrequently that nobody's ever challenged it. I mean, it's used to shut down hearings when one senator gets mad. It's happened. Republicans have done it. Democrats have done it. But it's not something that's been used systematically in a way where they've had to change the rules to get rid of it.
So, but theoretically, they could do that.
Or
theoretically, Mitch McConnell could just say, that's neat, congratulations, pat him on the head, give him a lollipop, and send him on his way.
It would be hard to do. I mean, you think about the Senate rules, too. I mean, when you change the Senate rules, that's a whole procedure, too. And that takes a supermajority to actually change the text of the rules. You can set a precedent like they did when they did the nuclear option, so-called nuclear option years ago, where they basically just said, hey, 51 votes, we can do whatever we want. Doesn't matter what the rules say. We're going to change the rules with the simple majority vote. So it's possible to force a temporary change in the rules with a simple majority, but a permanent change to get rid of the two-hour rule would something that they would usually do maybe at the beginning of a Congress, or it would take a long period of time to do.
What is the point of these rules if they can be changed at any given time or waived temporarily? What is the point of them?
Well, I mean, it provides order to the Senate. It gives every...
I've watched this week. There's not a whole lot of order to the
That's
Senate.
That's true. But the Senate, the one great thing about the Senate that I hope is never lost is that every single member has rights. And they can go down and say, hey, look, I want a roll call vote. You know, I am demanding a roll call vote. I'm not going to waive our rules that require roll call votes. Or I'm going to go down and, you know, invoke the two-hour rule and shut down the committees. I mean, there are all these rules to get the process started on legislation, to get the process started in nominations. And any senator can go down and gum up the works and actually make the Senate abide by its rules. Basically, the Senate never abides by its rules. It frequently does stuff by unanimous consent. They're constantly passing nominations and legislation by unanimous consent, meaning everybody kind of says, yes, let's get it done. We're not going to have a vote. And they all agree to it.
What would be the consequence of strictly adhering to the Senate rules? Would senators have to show up on the Senate floor a lot more often and talk to one another?
Well, one rule that's never invoked is that basically when a filibuster is going on, somebody's supposed to be speaking.
Right.
And so we constantly, if you watch C-SPAN and watch the Senate do a filibuster, most of the time you're seeing nothing. You're seeing a quorum call where they're reading off the names of the senators. Well, the senators are supposed to actually be sitting in their chairs and doing business, but one of the rules is you have to have a quorum to conduct business. They never have it. So
explain to people what a quorum is.
Well, you need enough. You need a number of senators to actually show up to actually conduct business. You need to have senators actually be in their seats.
Is it just a majority, or is there a certain number?
You would need a supermajority of senators to actually have a quorum, and you have a number
meaning
of
67.
Yeah, but basically, if you have the majority and minority leaders there. One of the side agreements they have is if they both kind of agree to just kind of conduct business, they never have a quorum there unless if they're actually voting.
Right, they don't. And you always hear floor speeches end, I suggest the absence of a quorum.
Yeah, right, right.
And then the clerk will conduct the roll. They go about three names in and then they stop because everybody kind of agrees that the rules are neat, but we're not going to bother with them.
Yeah, no, that's true. And when you look at this hearing, I think one of the interesting things that's happened is My opinion was if the Democrats were really serious about shutting this hearing down, they wouldn't have been threatening the two-hour rule halfway through the hearings. They would have done it in day one. I mean, if they really wanted to
now, what would
gum
the realistic
the
effect be of invoking the two-hour rule on day one? It was all opening statements and Democrats interrupting. Does that mean that the opening statements wouldn't have ended? Would that have meant that every day they would have to what one hearing took 8 hours would then suddenly take 4 days?
Yeah, they could do the hearings, you know, after when they're not in session. I mean, they could
force, so they could just vote to recess.
Yeah, until the Senate was out of session, so as not to conflict with Senate business.
But then they could immediately go to the floor of the Senate, vote to recess the Senate, and then go back and,
sure,
and restart.
Sure, they could do
the
that too. Yeah, would,
high school with paychecks, ladies and gentlemen. Washington
right.
D.C. is high school with with your paychecks.
Yeah.
So another bit of controversy that happened in the Kavanaugh hearing was Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey. There are different classifications of documents involved in this hearing, as there are in almost every hearing of somebody who's worked in government. There's executive privilege claims, and then there are committee privilege claims. And they're all classified to varying degrees, but incredibly low is the committee classification. Cory Booker said, I don't care. There are documents the world needs to see. So even though one of the possible consequences is me being thrown out of the United States Senate, because most people think if a state elects a senator, that's it, game over. But the Senate, explain this, the Senate actually can kick anybody out at any time for any given reason. The Senate decides who gets to, whether or not somebody sent by the state is accepted into the Senate.
Well, there have been court cases on that. Like when there's an election and you get the certificate, that's been fought out. I mean, they've had pitted fights. They had a fight over the Barack Obama seat. They had an appointment with the governor who ended up going to jail, who appointed a buddy of his who was accused of giving money to his campaign. And that was contested. The Senate was fighting and debating whether they were going to even seat that senator, Roland Burris.
Yeah.
And they ended up saying, realizing that it's very hard not to seat a senator, it's easier to kick him out because then you can have hearings and you can say, look, this guy paid for a seat, we can expel him. But actually seating a senator, it's harder to stop that.
But they can kick anybody out at any given time. And
they have to have a reason, they have to have a vote. They have to have a number of senators that would actually, you know, support the idea. But, you know, with Booker, I assume what is more likely to happen is maybe he gets a slap in the wrist.
Booker released some emails. I just want to read one of the emails because this is what Cory Booker, senator from New Jersey, thought the world needed to hear in this Kavanaugh hearing. This email is from Brett Kavanaugh to Helgard C. Walker. I think that's a character out of Harry Potter. I could be wrong. But he says, the people, this is right after September 11th. This is a discussion about racial profiling. This is January 17th, 2002. They're still talking about security issues and the possibility of racial profiling. He says, Kavanaugh writes, quote, the people who favor some use of race slash national origin obviously do not need to grapple with the interim question. But the people, such as you and I, who generally favor effective security measures that are race neutral, in fact, do need to grapple and grapple now with the interim question of what to do before a truly effective and comprehensive race neutral system is developed and implemented. I don't know where the bombshell is in that.
Yeah.
It's basically saying that Judge Kavanaugh is opposed to racial profiling, which is the liberal doctrine. So he's on their team on this one. But why release this and a couple of others? Why go through the theatrics? Is it just that Cory Booker wants to be president in 2020?
That's part of it. I mean, I will side with Cory Booker in one sense on this. I think the committee protects too much information.
That's true for all of the government.
Right. We as Americans should have the right to see a lot of this stuff. I mean, we know how this is going to
play out. The American people really want to see this. There are like 10 activists with big donations from George Soros who are dying for this. But in general, the American people don't care.
Well, I think one concern that this raises is the concern that some people like myself have had that Kavanaugh isn't great in the Fourth Amendment. I think he has a very limited view of the Fourth Amendment. I mean, ultimately, I think the balance of interests, you support a guy like that because he's going to be a good jurist. But I don't think conservatives should have any illusions that Kavanaugh is going to be actually a hero like Anton Scalia was on Fourth Amendment privacy issues, because he's not. I mean, and when you talk about his, he's talked a lot about post September 11th and his view of civil liberties. I have a little bit of concerns with that, and I do think the American people have the right to see it, but let's not fool ourselves. This isn't going to move any votes. This is all theatrics and has everything to do with 2020.
This might actually cause some of the hysterical protesters to go, wait a second, maybe he doesn't have horns because he's on our team on this one. I want to talk to you about the Senate protesters, because your years in the Senate, your decade plus in the Senate, plus year and a half on the Senate Judiciary Committee, you've been involved in not only judicial confirmation hearings, but hearings of all sort, and many of them contentious. So I imagine, were there protests? You ever see protesters at a hearing?
One or two, but not like this. I've never seen anything like this where you have protesters.
It's like every 3.5 minutes, somebody stands up and yells.
It's unbelievable. I mean, I'm glad they finally just cleared people out of there. I mean, if anybody wants to see the hearings, they can watch them on TV.
Right.
You know, I mean, they can watch them on CNN, C-SPAN, MSNBC. I mean, it's all out there. It's on Fox News. I mean, you can watch it. There's nothing being hidden from the American people. And, you know, you kind of want to have people there because the public is allowed to see it, but the public will see it anyway. So clearing the gallery out when you've got people who are abusing the system, I don't understand how somebody jumps up, doesn't get locked up for a few days.
Right. Or a $10,000 fine,
right.
Something like that.
Just lock them up till the end of the hearings, and then they can do whatever they want.
I don't want to lock them up. I want to hit them where it hurts,
yeah.
in the wallet. Now, we're going to talk about what procedures lie ahead for the Democrats to possibly stop this thing, but I want to talk about Chairman Grassley. Mm-hmm. He let this hearing get out of hand right at the very beginning.
Right.
And I don't think he's ever wrestled control of it back since.
Right, I agree.
I view him as incredibly weak. Maybe it has to do with his age, but has he always been weak? And I just didn't notice, or has Democrats never been this willing to be this vocal, be this animated, be this outrageous, and violate norms?
I think the latter. My experience with Senator Grassley is he's a very tough guy. He's a guy who will, you know, he's a straight talker. He's somebody who's going to dig his heels in and fight when he believes in something.
But he expects the other side to be playing fair,
right.
too. He'll deal with you straight up. He expects you to do the same. It
right.
doesn't seem like Democrats are doing that. And it also seems that he wasn't prepared for that.
No, I totally agree. This hearing's completely out of control. It's partially his fault. I mean, we saw what happened on day one. There was an organized strategy.
7 seconds in, Senator Kamala Harris of California gave her first Mr. Chairman.
Right, right.
And you know it was a dais full of Democrats who all want to be president going, I want to be first, but I don't want to be too early.
Right.
And they're all worried. And she jumped in first, and everybody else, you could see Cory Booker kind of go like, I missed my opportunity.
Right.
So then his staff just sent out a fundraising email instead. But it really, he could have gaveled that down and restored order.
He should have.
He didn't.
No, he didn't. What he did say, and he says he regrets it, that there's a situation where you can run the hearing or you can let the hearing run you. He clearly let the hearing run him, and it's a zoo. It's a mess. I mean, you've got people jumping up and down, yelling and screaming. It's not the way the Senate's supposed to operate, and it's awful. But, I understand the Democrats doing what they did. They know they're going to lose.
Right.
And so they're trying to do anything they can to slow up the process. I get that. And their strategy was, it worked out for them to slow it up in the front end to get their message out. But ultimately, it's going to result in nothing other than failure theater, because they can't win this.
Next, we have today and possibly tomorrow, expert testimony. What is the point of expert testimony? You got four people saying Judge Kavanaugh is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and four people saying that bread never should have been sliced. This is horrible. It's a travesty. Especially, is there a point where they go, we're just playing to the cameras here, and members stop showing up Saturday morning for the hearing of the panel of experts who oppose Judge Kavanaugh and say, I'm not going to bother asking these people questions?
Well, they won't, because they're getting a lot of press. So you'll see all the Democrats show up. Well, I mean, I think these are, you know, it's kind of one of the things where the Senate does things a certain way, and so they continue to do things the same way, even though they don't really matter. They're not really effective. Having all these panels after the hearing, I mean, it helps you make the record, and, you know, you're going to load up the record.
It gives
with
the impression
statements.
That you've done a thorough job, even though everybody's mind is made up.
It makes it, exactly. It makes it look like you're doing your job.
Theater.
It's
masturbatory theater on the taxpayer dime. All right. So on day one, Democrats tried to dismiss the hearing, postpone the hearing, have been begging Judge Kavanaugh to say, no, no, please don't vote on me until you have a chance to review all the documents.
Yeah.
Ridiculous things like that, that were never going to happen in the first place. As the hearing comes to a close, when will we expect a vote on the Kavanaugh nomination to come out of committees? That's the first step before it can go to the floor.
Well, what they can do is once they complete the hearing, which they're going to complete this week, they can schedule it for next week. I presume the Democrats will use a courtesy and say, it's a courtesy. Basically, there's not a Senate rule, but there's a committee precedent and tradition where the Democrats can say we need an extra week.
So they can get 2 weeks.
Yeah, they can kick it to another business meeting. So basically Grassley could say, okay, we're not going to have the vote on Tuesday, we're going to have it on Thursday or Friday. Or he can kick it to the week after to give him a week to think about it, which doesn't really slow down the process that much. That gets you into, you know, the third week of September. Get that vote out of committee. It goes to the Senate calendar. There are some strategies, I guess, as Democrats can try and not adjourn the Senate, keep the Senate in session to try and
but
not.
But they really can't do. They can try,
right,
but they
they'll
can't
lose.
Stop it.
They can use some procedural mechanisms, again, for failure theater to make believe they're fighting when they know they're going
to lose. Democrats really want this to go past the midterm,
right,
because a newly minted conservative Supreme Court justice runs the risk of deflating some of the enthusiasm on the left, since the left now legislates through the court system. The idea of a lot of those efforts being struck down can be deflating. So they want to get past November, which is why they're saying we need till the end of October to review these documents and this political theater. Republicans are having none of it. But how long, theoretically? Mitch McConnell said that Kavanaugh will be seated when the Supreme Court comes back into session, which is the first Monday in October, which I believe is the first.
It's doable.
But
they
is it etched in? Is it? Can the Democrats put it 2 weeks in?
No, October? No. But I think we'll see more failure theater. I think we will see walkouts of the Senate. I think they'll, you know, they are grandstanding in a way that we haven't seen ever in a Supreme Court nomination. We've seen it in some circumstances in the House and Senate with walkouts, but I bet the Democrats will walk out in the vote. Many of them will.
What happens if none of them show up for the vote, if there is an absence of a quorum?
We've had that happen before. We've had.
Does that delay the vote?
Well, when that happens, the sergeant-at-arms runs around and arrests senators and brings them back in.
Isn't there a specific order
yes,
for that given by the majority leader? What's that called?
You order the sergeant-at-arms. Basically, you go through, you say, quorum call, there's no quorum. Next is you order the presence of senators, and then you go down, I think there's a four votes until you order the sergeant-at-arms to go out and arrest senators.
And they will go anywhere in the United States.
Yeah.
If everybody just takes off to Alaska,
yes,
suddenly the sergeant-at-arms and his crew will fly off to Alaska and arrest these people.
Yeah, and there's a precedent where the sergeant-at-arms were running around back in the day arresting Republicans who were doing the same thing,
but people,
hiding in their offices. And
people remember Wisconsin a few years ago
when
they didn't want to pass a budget that Governor Walker was pushing through, the Republicans were pushing through. The Democrats left the state for a couple of weeks,
and
hid in Illinois.
Right, happened in Texas,
too. So is it beyond the pale to think that Democrats could do that?
Well, they'd have to leave the country. That would be harder.
Would they have to come back?
Hopefully not.
Yeah. But not just leave the country. If they all went back to their home states and did their level best to sort of avoid being arrested, it could delay the process, could it not?
I think that Democrats are smart enough to know that wouldn't really help them going into the fall elections.
Kamala Harris is pretty dumb.
Well, those guys are all running for president. You got, you know, Joe Manchin. You have Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota. You've got Claire McCaskill in Missouri. They don't want to look like they don't want to do their job because they're going to lose their race and not be senators anymore.
So aside from jetting off to Quebec to hide out, once this gets out, this will be out of the Judiciary Committee in 2 weeks at the most.
Sure. And then it goes in the Senate calendar.
Which, how quickly can it come to the floor?
One legislative day.
One legislative day. There are some tricks that Democrats can do to delay it, but nothing they can do to stop it.
Right. I mean, there have been situations where the Senate's been the same legislative day for weeks, but usually that's done by, you know, for reasons. One party can't just block and say we're not going to go to another legislative day.
And so when this finally, I mean, this has just been a hell of a mess and ridiculous and childish. Can the Senate go back to, I'm not saying there was never a time when they locked arms and sang Kumbaya. Mm-hmm. There was about 20 minutes after September 11th where they sang God Bless America.
Right.
And then they pulled out the long knives again and started stabbing each other. But are we watching the Senate become the House of Representatives?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it chipping away at the traditions of the Senate. The first was when Harry Reid in 2013 got rid of the filibuster for every nomination with the exception of the Supreme Court. Mitch McConnell ended that. Now, so we do not have filibusters on nominations. The next step is to get rid of the filibuster on legislation, and then you basically ruin the Senate. I mean, the two big traditions in the Senate are the right of every senator to offer amendments to start debates, and the right to debate and filibuster. And we're losing both of those in the Senate. And the Senate is becoming a little bit more like the House every day. It's a slow process, but it's a clear process where we're seeing a complete change in the nature of the Senate from what it was just 20 years ago.
Way off topic, but I want to get your thoughts, because you love the Senate. I love the Senate. And I look at the House as junior high. There is a push on the left to say, you know, the Republicans represent only 18% of the U.S. population. It's unfair that Idaho, who has less than like 500,000 residents, has two votes in the U.S. Senate, and California, with 42 million people, five of which are here illegally, they only have two votes. That would really make the Senate the House. It would make two houses.
It would also destroy our republic. I mean, one of the great things about our republic is state sovereignty and the idea that
Senators were not elected popularly until the 1920s, I think it was. They were there. The people were represented by the House.
Right.
The Senate represented the states. The senators were appointed by the state legislators.
Yes.
We got rid of that and
right.
began this process of
Can
making
we go
the
back?
Senate into the House. I wish we could. I really wish we could.
Yeah.
If I could repeal one amendment, that would be it. Lastly, Brian Darling, while we're sitting here and we're talking about what comes next in the Kavanaugh hearings, and it should, there's a lot of theatrics, but it should go step one, step two, step three, right to confirmation. There are three people, one of whom you used to work for, who could still derail this whole thing. Although John Kyle will be a seated senator by then, we could lose, I think, one of these people.
Mm-hmm.
That is Rand Paul, who you worked for, Susan Collins of Maine, and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, where all the Democrats will run and hide when they're to keep a quorum from happening. What are the odds looking like right now that those two liberal senators and the wacko bird senator, as Senator McCain called Rand Paul, what are the odds that any of them are a no vote? Or do you see it more likely that you'll get a Joe Manchin, you'll get a Heidi Heitkamp to come to the other side?
Far more likely that you have maybe two or three Democrats voting for this nominee than any Republicans voting no. Everybody knows this guy's qualified. There's no debate. He's a qualified to be in the Supreme Court.
The American Bar Association, a liberal organization, said he's extremely well qualified, which is their highest rank.
Right. Now, the question is, will politics overtake qualifications and, you know, will we lose a vote here or there? It doesn't appear so. I mean, there's been no smoking guns at the hearing. There's nothing indicating that he's done anything to disqualify himself. And I think you have a lot of Democrats who right now, the only thing they care about is getting reelected, and they are going to vote. You'll have a significant number of Democrats vote. I mean, not that many, but enough to make it a bipartisan vote.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but in the Clarence Thomas hearings, he'd gone through his confirmation hearing before the Anita Hill stuff didn't come out until the, refer to it as the refractory period, the time between the committee hearing ending and the committee voting a week
Well,
or
they
two.
Had her testify, so they had two
they
sets
had, no,
of
they,
hearings.
They then they had
right.
a second set
yeah, they
of
had
hearings.
Two sets of hearings.
That delayed his confirmation hearing. So there is a possibility that somebody could be cooking up something against Judge Kavanaugh.
Right.
That they're waiting, they're biding their time for the right moment, because I don't think Anita Hill happened by accident. I think that was pretty well
right.
planned as well. But they could come out and say, we need to hold another hearing on this very important issue, right?
Well, yes, but this has been a very predictable process. I mean, we knew that the Democrats were going to do everything they can to stall the hearings. Now, the next stalling tactic is to make believe that there's a scandal. You're going to have them. It's totally predictable that after this hearing's over, there's going to be a document discovered, and they're going to say, oh, we have to restart the hearings, or we need more documents to explain something that we think he may have said. Guaranteed that once this hearing's over, they're going to ask for more as an excuse to call for more hearings so they can say, you know, we can't participate in this process. We're not being allowed to fully participate in the process. I've said this a couple times, but it really is failure theater. They're going to lose. They know they're going to lose, but they're going to use all these stalling tactics to make it look like they're fighting when they're not.
You got to placate the mob, or they'll start showing up at your town halls and screaming and yelling at you like they do at the hearings. Brian Darling, Brian H. Darling on Twitter, Liberty Government Affairs.
That's correct.
All right.
Do I have to pick
where he works now? Yeah, just reach your hand in there, and these are for the two. A lot of people were like, hey, I want to win Kurt's new book. I want to win Kurt's new book, too. We don't have copies of Kurt's new book, Schlichter's book, because it's not out until October 2nd. I have two signed copies of his first novel that these are the drawings for. We'll try and get him back when his book actually comes out. As long as my wife's due to go into labor that week. So it's going to be a game of chicken. We'll see how that works out. But draw one and read it aloud.
I will.
You're so blind. You can put your glasses on.
No, I can see it. Tucker Carlson? This thing's fixed.
No, yeah, it's because Tucker's dying for it.
Brian Lojack.
Brian Lojack. Give me that. Draw one more. I got to save these. I'm going to have to contact these people. Don't be anybody international. Good Lord. No. If I'd have known you were coming in, I would have gotten you a jeweler's loop.
Nicole Williams.
Nicole Williams and Brian Lojack, whatever. Congratulations. You guys win. You can enter to win a signed copy of my book, Outrage Incorporated. Or if you've bought a copy of my book, or if you buy a copy of my book, you can just email me your address, and I'll send you a signed book plate. You can save me a lot on postage. The difference between stamping and sending a book. Appreciate everybody listening. Click subscribe. Don't forget to tell a friend. Subscribe on iTunes, the audio version, 4 days a week, 5 days a week, really, because we take this audio in there. Anyway, I'm rambling. Go start your weekend. It's Friday, people. See you later.